as the understanding of maturity of leadership, you go from you in the middle to team in the middle. And in the middle, the team is responsible for doing these different things, not just you.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
What is going on? I'm your host, Javier Hinojo, with the Naked Truth of Real Estate Investing. Now, I've been out traveling, so my voice is a little off today, but this will be very interesting, and I'm extremely excited because I got Corey Portwright as my first launch, my first
number one,
that's right, and I promised you that, and when you found out I was doing a podcast, you're like, man, I'm coming on, I got to be number one, I got to be the first one out. Yeah. And it's great. I mean, it's super cool. If you guys don't know Corey, I mean, I can sit here and I can read his bio and it'll take me 45 minutes. I was trying to break this down and say, I'm going to have Corey Portwright part 1, 2, 3, 48 million. You know, just I'm like, holy crap, what has this guy not done? And I mean, I guarantee you will learn as experienced as he is. You'll learn from everything that he's done. He's just a giving guy. That's the biggest thing that I would take away from Corey. He loves to give. He got tons and tons of experience. He's doing real estate and he breaks it down really, you know, if you're like brand new, he can just explain it to you, walk you baby step by step. If you're doing a big transaction, super complicated, he can get that done as well. So trying to go through your bio. I mean, you guys started in real estate. You sold your first business and the guys that bought it were in real estate. Is that what I got? Okay. So, and that got you interested in real estate. Like most people, they read Rich Dad, Poor Dad and kind of the itch. One of the things that I read, I was laughing when I was reading it, that you said, hey, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it said that 9 out of 10 businesses fail. And it said, and you got excited about that. I'm like, oh my gosh, it just like hit me. Like, and for me, for a second, I'm like, oh shoot, that sucks. But you're like, I was excited because, you know, the glass is half full or 1/10 full, right? You're like, all I need to do is start 10 businesses and one will succeed. If I start 100, I'll have 10 to succeed. That's a great attitude, man. I love that. I definitely love that. So you jumped in, you sold the business. You just consumed all the CDs and tapes. Now we got podcasts, right? You're not that old, Corey, man. You look pretty young. So, but you were doing CDs and tapes. You consumed everything for like, I don't know, a year. I don't know how long it was, but you took all the knowledge in. And you've done everything from selling stuff online to courses. I mean, what haven't you done, man? Have you washed the rims at the corner of an intersection and say, I'll wash rims for a dollar? I mean, that's about the only thing that you have not done. All right, man. I don't know. I probably butchered your bio, but what I miss?
No, I didn't wash rims, but I probably feel like I have. Yeah, I mean, I was excited about learning and doing new things and have always been excited about learning and doing new things, particularly in the entrepreneurial space and having the drive to, okay, that didn't work. Why didn't it work? And then figure out what is going to work. The book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that you mentioned was instrumental. I think it has been for many people that are entrepreneurs, at least many ones I've talked to, ones I've talked to on my podcast, and also the ones that we work with on our coaching clients. There is something about this idea of being an entrepreneur, setting your own hours, doing what you want to do, not having, quote, a boss, building a legacy, building wealth, not this 9-to-5 job where you feel limited. And there is a point in my life, Javier, that I basically was challenged with a thought. And I'll just throw this out here real quick because maybe you thought this too, but I thought everybody should be an entrepreneur, right? Why not? All the benefits of being an entrepreneur, setting your own hours, not having a boss, not have to get up when you don't have to get up. No one's telling you have to take a lunch. If you have family, I got 2 stepkids. We can go travel. We can go do things. We took a trip to Asia for a month. It was the most amazing trip, went to Maldives and all these. Why wouldn't people want to have these experiences? And everybody should be an entrepreneur. You have your business, you can make money, there's no ceiling. And then one day God stopped me and said, not everybody's built to be an entrepreneur. And that's okay. And that one thought right there, man, really challenged me, because I was thinking that this is the way that everyone should go. But the reality is that I still am challenged by this thought, that I don't think you can teach drive. I think you either have it or you don't have it. Do you agree with that?
I 100% believe that.
Yeah, you either have it or you don't have it. And I knew I had it at a young age. I didn't really know how to channel it. And I was going into all kinds of other bad things. I have, most of my friends went to boys' home. One of them went to a, one of my best friends went to prison when he got turned 18. I had some really bad influences growing up. My dad passed away when I was very young. So my mom raised me. I had two older brothers that basically were, that was tough growing up. And so I didn't have some of that fatherly figure and all those other things. I basically couldn't channel all this energy. I had a lot of energy and drive, but I couldn't challenge it in a positive way, in a way that was building something that was going to last, was something that was beneficial. I was just doing all these things that were just getting in trouble all the time, getting in fights all the time. I grew up in a small town, just getting in trouble all the time. And I realized there was one component of that that was like the thread of all these other experiences. That was who I was hanging out with, man. I mean, it's hard for you to go get in trouble multiple times by yourself. I know you can do it, but it's very, very difficult to do that. What you got to do is you got to find a crew. You feel me? You got to find a crew that wants to go do those things, right? Wants to go spray paint the walls, wants to go break into cars, wants to go throw rocks at cars just for the heck of it. We used to throw rocks over the bridge to hit cars driving on the highway. I mean, horrible stuff, horrible. People could have died. But at the time, you do it for that thrill and you have all this drive to do something, but you don't know how to channel it. I wanted to structure a story like that, because all that drive that you have, all those things, all those experiences, all that stuff that you're doing has a purpose if you can channel it somewhere. And it wasn't until I actually got a big brother from the Big Brother Sister program that, even though I had two brothers, one of them was sent off because he was getting in a lot of crazy trouble. The other one got a DUI. So they were rough. They were having their own challenges, just like me. And I was getting in trouble, always at the police station all the time. And so I had to figure out a way to challenge this. So I joined a Christian heavy metal band, and that changed my life. I got around people that, one, loved the Lord, which was still to this day one of the huge purposes. I'm freaking alive. I promise you, my mom prays for me every single day, and I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't because of that. But I got involved with this Christian heavy metal band, and it changed the trajectory of everything. I moved away from all of this group of people that were not doing anything in their lives. They did not have any goals in their life. They did not have any ambitions to do any better. They wanted to stay where they were. They didn't care about learning. All they wanted to do was the thrill, the next thing, get in trouble. And it was just all of that. I had to get away from that to move into another situation where it's around positive influences. We read the Bible almost every night. We went and played these events and festivals, and people were giving their lives to the Lord, which was amazing. But this was in my young teens. And I had to move away from this situation to go to another situation because of the circle of people I'm around. Now, why is that important with real estate? The reason I say that is because who you are associated with is going to make a huge difference of your success path. That doesn't mean that you have to go be an entrepreneur, even though I think you should, and probably Javier thinks you should too, but you have to decide your success path. And it is going to be dictated, at least in my experience, in a huge way by who you associate yourself with.
Yeah, that's definitely key, who you're hanging around with. I did a TikTok video and it said, if I can tell something different to me, if I was a teenager or 20 years old, what would it be? And it'd just be careful who you hang around with. Get rid of your loser friends, hang out with people who are positive, who are going to encourage you, motivate you, and grow your network, right? That's the best way you're going to make those connections.
Right.
So yeah, definitely who you hang out with. And one of the things you said that hit me is that not everybody's an entrepreneur. So a lot of people have this scarcity mentality saying, hey, if I teach my employees well, or some of my team members, they're going to leave and start their own thing. Hey, you know what? You can't hold anybody back from doing their own thing, but some people don't want to do their own thing. Hey, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of pressure. I'm sure you've never had sleepless nights, right?
I'll even take it to the next level of the understanding of where I was going with that thought, right? Not everybody's an entrepreneur, Javier, and that's perfectly okay. And not only that, thank God they aren't. Because if you have only entrepreneurs in your organization, right? We have a team, we have acquisitions, we have dispositions, we have sales managers, we have lead manager. If I only have entrepreneurs in my organization, it won't work.
Yeah, it'll fall apart.
And here's the deal. If I only have employee-minded people, now when I say employee-minded people, that's not a stigma. It's not negative. I used to think it was. I used to think they need to change their mindset. They need to do that because they need to be like how I'm thinking. But that's a selfish way to think. And this is really has to do with maturity of leadership. When you are a young leader, you think only about yourself because you are leading and you're figuring things out and you're leading in a way where all these things that work for you must be the way it works for someone else. As you mature as a leader, you start realizing that, oh my gosh, not only are people vastly different on their PI index, on their COBE test, are they vastly different? They need to be in order to have a healthy, positive, growing organization, team, right? Business. Yeah, if it's just you, a one-man show, I get it, right? But at some point you graduate, you get tired of staying up to 4 o'clock in the morning because you have more. The funny thing is a one-man show. Be careful what you get because you just might get it. The more driven you are, right, the more successful you'll be. But there's all these things that are common in those statements are you. You are the bottle washer. You are the salesperson. You are the acquisition person. You are the lead manager. You are the person that takes care of the customer service. You're the person that goes out there and knocks on the door. You're the person that raises the cash. You're the person, you. It's a circle and you in the middle of the spoke. And all these other things are just, they come back to you. As a group, as a understanding of maturity of leadership, you go from you in the middle to team in the middle. And in the middle, the team is responsible for doing these different things, not just you. And whenever I had that aha moment of, oh my gosh, I've been thinking everybody should just be an entrepreneur driven and all that, you know, I started to look at things differently. And when you start to have a different perspective on that, they say, when your mind expands, it can never go back to the same size. Well, that was true in my case. I had awareness, an aha, an open understanding, a new understanding, new information that led me to go, wow, then if it's not going to be me that takes care of all of these things, who is it? And what does that person need to care about? What do they need to have? What kind of traits do they need to have? What kind of personality would that type of person be? Do they care about details? Are the little things important in that position? You start to ask yourself, and so you create these avatars in these positions for each one of your departments and different positions. And that's just a new understanding of leadership. So
I have a question on that. So just kind of piggyback on that a little bit. I'm going to ask you the question, but I'm going to give you, I'm going to let you go second right after you hear Elon Musk answer. Okay. I'll put you on the spot.
All right.
I think it was Elon Musk, but somebody asked him like, and I've thought about this all the time. Like, how do you know if you're an entrepreneur? How do you know, am I an entrepreneur or am I just a high level a team member? I mean, how do you know? Somebody asked, I believe it was Elon Musk at a conference, said, hey, what would you tell those entrepreneurs, business owners? What would you give them for like motivation or like, they, you know, for drive, whatever? And he's like, if you need motivation, don't be an entrepreneur. It was like, bam, like, oh shoot. That's like super simple question, right? So, well, I mean, what are your thoughts, right? If somebody's thinking right now, like, hey, I want to get started. I want to quit my job. I want to start this business. I want to do this, this and that. How would you tell them, you know, hey, are you an entrepreneur?
He also said Elon's just eccentric, crazy, probably just a pioneer of our time with Tesla and everything else, SpaceX. And just, so one of the things Elon said is, I'd rather chew on glass and start then start a business? Like, if you need to choose, like, what's it like to run a business, start a business? He's like, get a bunch of glass and just chew on it.
That's hilarious.
To answer your question, how do you know if you're an entrepreneur? I think it's easier to answer a question, how do you know if you're not? And you're not an entrepreneur if you care so much about security, having to know exactly when that paycheck comes in, having to really care so much about someone telling you when you have to work, telling you when you have to stop. If you don't have this kind of ability to be able to create things, I think, out of thin air, I think a lot of times just Evan Pagan, who I spent a lot of time with, he said that we are not information marketers, but we are thought marketers, or we are thinking leaders. And the way that you think about things is different than someone that cares about having that steady paycheck. And so I think that one of the pieces to kind of test to say if you're an entrepreneur is, do you have this kind of burning, not like just an itch, but a burning desire from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed about creating something bigger in your life than just having the same idea that I'm going to go to this job, I'm going to work 9 to 5, I'm going to get off work, I'm going to go to this job, work 9 to 5, get off work. If there's some kind of burning desire in you that is creative, that says, I want to create something. I think at the heart of what an entrepreneur is they're a creator.
Oh, that's actually really good.
I think, and what's cool about that is God makes people in different ways. And so thank God that my lead manager, Caroline, which is unbelievable, she's incredible. She doesn't necessarily have that desire to go out there and be an entrepreneur, but she has a great desire to be a someone that helps build the vision. She wants the vision to sees where we're going, sees the roadmap, all on board, but has no desire to build out the schematic, no desire to create the vision of where we're going, right? Just has the desire that says, I am going to be there every day, show up, tell me what to do. I will do it. You can count on me. And thank God that she has that outlook. And I think that you have to assess each kind of person that's a part of your organization and just figure out where their genius zone is. There's a book by Dan Sullivan called, Javier, you probably read it, it's like Genius Zone or Your Genius. And it basically talks about, what are you naturally good at? What do you naturally gravitate yourself towards? And if you are naturally gravitated towards negotiations, you were the person that in school that was creative and came up with these cool, wild stories of things. And you were an influencer. I think a lot of entrepreneurs also tend to be big influencers. So if you had a people that generally were gathered a crowd around you because you had something interesting to say, or you shared something, or you were some kind of a leader, people followed you. Those tend to be some of those entrepreneurial characteristics. And so I just think at the heart of an entrepreneur, they're a creator.
Right. So talking about like being a marketer, if you're an entrepreneur, you're definitely a marketer, right? Because you're selling yourself, you're selling your team coming to you. You got to maybe go raise some money. You got to sell your product. You know, you're kind of the marketer. So you're really good at that. I love you. You're always posting on social media. You got your grateful days. You're like, I don't know, even 1,000-something grateful day, grateful post. I mean,
yeah,
it's super cool, man. You're always, you're very involved and you're always helping somebody out if somebody needs something. But talk to me a little bit about being a marketer.
I think that you are not in the real estate business. I don't think we are. I think we're in the marketing business. I think even if you dial it in even more focused, I think we're actually in the acquisition of client business. Marketing is nothing more than making something unforgettable, making something interesting, making people want to pay attention. Marketing is just getting some eyeballs, getting someone to stop from the scroll and pay attention to whatever it is you have to say. Because Once you're able to do that, and let's put this in a very specific situation for real estate, particularly for multifamily, for you and I, and most of your listeners here for your podcast. We have over, I have with these 120 units that we're building new right now, which will bring our B class to an A class, which is amazing. We'll have over 600, I'll have over 600 units of, I'm a part of a GP on. Not a huge part, but a pretty decent part on three different multifamily projects. And what we did with one of those projects is we had some land that we already owned. We already owned over 120 units in Columbus, Georgia by the university. Unbelievable project. You could throw a cell phone and hit the college, which you want to be as close as you can to college. And this is a student housing project, which made it even better. So we had some land that we also purchased whenever we bought these existing value add apartments. And I think they were like 2006, maybe 2004. I need to go look at them. We've owned them for over 3 years now. But there was some land that was already developed. But the guy that owned the property and the land that we bought it from stopped developing it because he ran out of money or ran out of resources or just didn't get it done. So that land sat there for a year or two. And we were kind of like, okay, we're going to do something. But we didn't realize that it was already developed. It's already set up to build another 100 units. But some grass had grown, trees had grown, everything over it. So we just kind of didn't think about much. Then we realized one day what land was selling for about a year and a half later. And it was significant, almost seven figures, which is crazy. Wow. And so we had several acres here. So what we ended up doing is we already knew, we found the original developer. We found the original guy that did all the blueprints and everything. And the city basically had already had it approved, which was awesome. But we had to get some eyeball. We had to get some marketing going. So we came and we created basically a presence for this land project. I mean, for these new units that we're going to build. But we built up this vision of what this is going to look like to the city, how this is going to benefit the city, and how if we got the city out there that says, look, community, and they send it out to their newspapers, they send it on the media, they send it out on links on social media and say, look what's coming, this beautiful complex that's going to help our city. Anytime you have a Monet of a brand new apartments that come up that look beautiful that you can show this picture of, the city is going to get excited about it most likely if they already were on board before and you just didn't build it. So we got marketing out there. And now once you get the marketing out there, that does a couple of things. One, it attracts people that like those kind of projects. It attracts those kind of people. So who are the kind of people that like those kind of projects? Affluent. People tend to be affluent. They have some money. Doctors, lawyers, usually accredited investors, which in our world, Javier, we can never have enough of, because those folks tend to, here's what's interesting, not be entrepreneurs. Doctors, lawyers, chiropractors, right? These people tend to have all these other things going on. Now, they might have a practice and they're running that. What I'm saying is that they tend to not have a lot of time, but they have more money than they do time. And they attract, you attract people like that because they're only earning 2 or 3%, if that, in the bank or something like that. And so we come and offer them a pref, and we can offer them a cut, and we can offer them some agreement depending on the deal structure, 70-30 or whatever it is on the GP and LP side, a perpetuity, whatever the way. That's the cool thing about multifamilies. You can kind of cut it up how you need to in order to make it a healthy deal for everyone involved. You attract people like that, and they see this project and they see you involved in it. And so what did that? The marketing. The marketing did. The marketing drew those people in because it showed this vision of what is coming. And oh, that's what awesome. Marketing does. Marketing attracts the right kind of people, but it also does too, Javier, I'll say this last thing. It also repels the wrong kind of people.
Wrong people. Hey, and it also brings some lead flow as well, some leads.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? It also brings some leads, for sure.
That's right. That's right. So, those people, well, if they know a project,
yep.
they know somebody else. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Corey's doing a brand new build and I got this land. Let me reach out to Corey.
Let me reach out to them.
Yep. Which is just kind of cool, right? Because I usually ask one of these five questions, like your best lead source, analyzing, structuring a deal, funding it, exiting. You actually answered four of those in this last 5 minutes, right? You do get some deal flow by marketing. On analyzing, what I got is like, hey, when you get a property, hey, just look into what else you can do with it, right? It took you guys a year and a half. So hey, like, hey, like if you ask for land, go check what land sales for, go see what you can do with it. And you can also structure a project by bringing in investors. Just make sure that everybody gets what they want, everybody's happy with, and you can split it up any way you want. You can do it a million ways, how to structure a real estate project. And then you talked about how you funded it, right? You're going to fund it by a lot of these accredited investors that, you know, saw the marketing and interested in these kind of deals. So that's kind of cool. So without even me asking, you pretty much hit those subconsciously, which is great. So
subconsciously,
right? There you go. So I'm going to go ahead and switch gears here. And I'm going to ask a question basically. And then after this question, I'm going to go to the roulette. All right. Oh, naked truth roulette.
I'm concerned about the roulette.
Don't worry about the roulette. I think this will be the most PG show that I do.
Okay.
Because this is the naked truth, right? This is where you don't lose your shirt and you don't get caught with your pants down. And so this will be probably the most PG version we do.
They say they know who has a bathing suit on whenever the tide goes out.
That is funny. Yes, for sure. All right. So what would you say would be the worst mistake you made on, we'll say, in a real estate transaction? How could you avoid it?
You know, I'm not going to say in the real estate transaction because I made a few, but not one I'd say is huge.
Well, you can be personal too. I mean, if you want to do personal, I mean,
I'd say it's a mindset thing. And here it is, man. And this took me years and years and years. You said, you're not an old guy, but going to be 45 June 9th, right, of this year. And it took me, I mean, every bit of 30 years. Yeah. Well, I mean, whenever you're in your teens, you don't really know anything, but it took me a long time to say what I'm going to really tell you. And it's okay to ask for help.
Oh,
I thought it was a weakness.
Yeah.
To ask.
Oh, man, you're hitting home. You're hitting home.
Man, I thought it was a weakness, bro. I mean, I absolutely thought I was a weak person if I asked for help. And here, quite frankly, if I can just tell you one real reason why is growing up the way that I grew up, my experience, my mom worked at 3M for 10 years straight. On seven days a week, many times 12-hour day shifts. She got an award for not missing a single day in 10 years, and she even had a kidney stone.
Oh, my gosh. Your mom's my hero.
My mom had the Mary Kay car. She was an incredibly driven person, and she raised three incredibly driven boys on her own. My dad passed away when I was 19 months old. And so I guess, man, I mean, I was just taught that no one is coming to your rescue. No one's coming to the door. Publishing Clearinghouse is not coming to knock on the door. If you want anything in life, you go out there and make it happen. I got involved with selling Kirby's at a very, very young age. I was the number one top sales guy for Kirby.
Rainbows, baby. Rainbows. I sold rainbows.
I killed rainbows. I crushed your rainbows.
Oh, come on. But
I was the number one selling Kirby agent, even to a place I got into a disposition position, which means that I started making money from other guys that I was training, even at my 16 years of old. And the reason I'm saying that is because Mr. Kirby wrote me a letter I still got. I got to a place where I was knocking on 100 doors, putting on three demonstrations, and selling one Kirby. 100 doors, three demonstrations, selling one Kirby. Then I got to a place where I was knocking 100 doors, putting on three demonstrations, selling two Kirbys. Then I got to a place where I was knocking 100 doors on three demonstrations, selling three Kirbys. I got awards for selling and this and that. And why I'm saying all this is because we would have this saying that said, if it's going to be, it's up to me. And I would get up in the morning with this group of people saying this out loud, affirming it, and to the place where I believed it. I absolutely believed that nothing was going to happen unless it was up to me. And that was something that drove me to one position at life. But then when I got to this position where I couldn't go kind of any further, I had to realize that was the very thing that was going to hold me back from going to the next level. And so that's my biggest mistake.
Awesome.
Holding on to that. It's a weakness to ask for help.
Yeah, ask for help.
That I got coaching. Yep. The moment that I started to rely on other people for their skill sets, and it was okay to do that. The moment that I let people go make mistakes, even though it's frustrating to me, because I knew I could do it better and I could do it. What I realized is that I couldn't do it better. What I realized when someone else puts the emphasis and focus on that task, they can do it better than me. That was a limited mindset that I can do it better than you. I'm better than you. I know how that position works. Someone can do it better than you and they're in a better position. So anyway, let go of the limited mindset that you are the only person that you have to rely on in order to build a business. It is absolutely not only healthy. One of the smartest things that you can do is to get other people involved in your business for help.
Awesome. That's great advice. Yeah. Don't do it on your own, guys. There's plenty of help. Plenty of help. So that definitely often, that's one thing that I challenge, that I had trouble with.
Man, I hear you, dude. Right. It's like, well, growing up, I mean, dude, I didn't have anybody to rely on. I don't have a silver spoon in my mouth. I mean, I couldn't wait. I mean, if the door wasn't open, I'd go break it down. I don't have to wait on anybody. But as I gotten a little older, I'm sure, you know, you have to build the team. You have to rely on people. You have to ask for help. And sure. Some of the smartest people in the world do it.
That's awesome. Corey, Arthur, entrepreneur, super cool. A lot of good stuff, man. I appreciate it. And which brings us to the end of the interview, which I'm going to bring out the Naked Truth Roulette. Can you see my screen?
Gosh, you got like a little app.
Yeah, I got an app, and I'm going to go ahead and push the first one. You do get one pass, Corey, because I like you.
Okay.
Extra like you. Okay. All right. Everybody else that I'm going to interview, I'd like him as well, but I don't think I'm going to give them a pass. Unless you necessarily need one. Let's go, first one.
How cool is this? Oh my gosh.
All right. Question number one. Let's see. Where don't you mind waiting at? As an entrepreneur, sometimes we're pretty impatient. So where don't you mind waiting at?
Don't mind waiting at my daughter's school.
Okay. When are you going to pick her up? Drop her off? Cool. Awesome. All right. That was pretty easy. That's pretty chill. Don't get nervous. You got a really simple one, and I got some really hard ones, but it just it's a roulette, right? Oh yeah.
What is that?
Okay. All right. I hope your wife listens to this one.
Oh my god.
If you could take any celebrity on a date, who would it be?
Oh my gosh. Are you serious right now?
Come on in.
Oh my goodness. If I could take any celebrity on a date. There is this man, and we always joke about it, right? I should probably know her name, but maybe it's probably good I don't. But there's this Victoria's Secrets model that I always joke with this whenever I'm with my wife at Victoria's Secret, and because she has like these real exotic eyes. Anyway, it's like one of the most like notorious Victoria's Secret models, and I want to say her name is like Angelica something. So that would be the girl.
All right. We're going to end it here so you don't get in trouble, man. Let's go.
Okay.
The least is better.
Francesca. I think her first name is Francesca.
All right. Let's see here. What's next? Oh, have you ever credited a movie? And which movie?
Oh, dude, I credit Titanic.
Oh, yeah. Good one. Actually, we just watched that the other day at the house.
Did you cry?
Pretty good. Pretty good. All right, last question.
Did you cry? You didn't say if you cried or not.
I can't tell you. I'm not here at the. I'm not the one in the roulette. All right, last question. Let's see where we're at. Hey, do you have any tattoos?
I do.
All right.
I do. I've got a tribal. I've got the crown of thorns, and I've got Alpha Omega, and then I've got the Hawaiian islands on my back.
All right, super cool. Awesome, man. Great sport, guys. I got Corey. He does some coaching. I'm going to put all the social media links in the show notes. He's a great coach, guys. If you guys want to get started in real estate, he started locally. Now he's doing national, and he knows so much. I mean, I want to like sign up, you know, just because he's got so much knowledge. One of the greatest guys, one of the biggest givers that I know. And you're always going to get a lot of good. Just he's going to give you 100%, 110% every single time. Best selling author, Corey, he wants to date all his Victoria's Secret models, all of them. I think that's what he said.
No, and, it's Francesca. I think her name's Francesca.
And I really appreciate it. He talked a little bit about what it takes to be an entrepreneur. How do you know if you're an entrepreneur? It's okay if you're not an entrepreneur. You know, one of your projects you got coming along and your biggest kind of takeaway from, not mistake, but asking for help, right? Asking for help. And I believe that mentors, coaches, masterminds, hands down, I would not be where I'm at without that. And I'm sure you second that for sure. So I appreciate your time for being here. And this is The Naked Truth. Don't lose your shirt.
Awesome. Thanks, Javier. I appreciate
it. And thank you, Corey. I'll talk to you later.
See you, bro.
Bye.
Time consuming, it can be very scary. It could be like trying to get somewhere without a roadmap. So that's why I created this due diligence list when I buy a property. I'm going to buy an apartment building, even a mobile home park. You can use it for mostly pretty much any commercial property. But this one specifically is for a multifamily. It could be a 6-unit. It could be a 600 unit. You can use it for what you like. So go ahead and sign up, put your name, email. I'll send you the free link to my due diligence. This is what I've used to buy hundreds and hundreds of units, if not thousands of units. So sign up. You get my link. You get an Excel sheet as well. And also we use the software, project management software, monday.com. Feel free to sign up for a free trial. I do have an affiliate link. You don't pay any extra. They just pay me a small fee. Don't have to use it. You have the Excel spreadsheet, but if you use monday.com, it's actually a lot better, a lot smoother, a lot prettier, and you can do a whole bunch of other stuff. There's even a video there I created in the link. So check the link, sign up, and this is my giveaway for you guys. Thank you so much. Take care.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.